I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And I'm Kurt.
We are Nirvana!
I had a chance to record a conversation with a former friend of the late Kurt Cobain. He shared some insights regarding who was, for a brief time, the biggest rock star on the planet. Jeff Burlingame, the author, in particular. Oh, well, whatever, never mind.
Yes, that was my first book, named after a Nirvana lyric, of course, in the hit song Smells Like Teen Spirit. And I wrote it in 2005 and published in 2006.
How did that come about?
That was an interesting story. I mean, I had the background with Kurt. Of course, I grew up in Aberdeen, Washington, graduated high school with Kurt's sister, and Kurt and I became friends in high school. Kind of another strange, you know, small town, everybody knows everybody else scenario. One of my best friends was a guy named Eric Schillinger, whose father was a teacher at the school. And Kurt, for a period of time, almost a year actually, was sleeping on Eric's family's couch. So Eric and I would head home to his house, which is a few blocks from the high school in Aberdeen. We would head home for lunch, and one day we just walked in and some 19-year-old dude was sleeping on the couch. And I asked Eric who that was, and he said, well, that's Kurt Cobain, Kim's brother, and that's how I knew him. And I didn't think much of it. And then from there, we sort of evolved into a little relationship, hung out every once in a while, in particular at Melvin's practices, again, just down the road there in the back alley. And then we became friends. And then so years later, I don't hear about Kurt for a couple of years. I'm away in college. A friend of mine brings me a copy of Nevermind and says, you know, I think this band's from Aberdeen. And I open up the sleeve, and inside is a picture of Kurt Cobain flipping me off, flipping everyone off in the picture.
I think we've all been flipped off by that one. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, right. And so that was my connection. Again, reacquainted myself with Nirvana and got back into the music and all of those sorts of things. And then fast forward a few years, I moved back to Aberdeen. I take a job at the Daily World newspaper as the arts and entertainment editor, and I start writing about Nirvana. Of course, Kurt had killed himself in interim, and that really affected me pretty deeply in several ways on several levels. You know, here's this kid from your hometown who you knew you were friends with and who made something of himself, kind of like the parade analogy that I talked to you about earlier. You know, if I can inspire one kid sort of thing. Well, Kurt really inspired me to sort of become something because he had done that. And then he kills himself in 1994, and it just took me down a spiral for a while. And in addition to some things that happened in my personal life, I come up and I am working at the newspaper. I'm writing about Nirvana's 5th anniversary of their album, 10th anniversary, those sorts of things. 10th anniversary of Kurt's death pops up in 2004, and these teenagers from Aberdeen High School wrote a letter to the newspaper asking why nothing had been erected in Kurt's honor in his hometown. And a friend of mine was on the city council, Paul Fritz. He calls me up, says we should do something, so we do. And in 2004, we started a nonprofit organization called the Kurt Cobain Memorial Foundation, and in Kurt's name. And we got a sign erected at the city limits of Aberdeen that says, "Welcome to Aberdeen, come as you are." That was erected in 2005, and that's the same year that I started writing the book.
What's it like writing a biography? You ever piss anybody off?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The Cobain thing was difficult for me, especially. I mean, it was sort of a unique biography in that I had, you know, an in and knowledge of the subject matter in a personal and close way that not a lot of biographers have. So that was difficult because I was towing the line between friendships with people and being a reporter. Being a biographer, there were people that were upset with me over the book. One person in particular with this one was Nirvana's first drummer, Aaron Burkhart, one of Nirvana's first drummers, who was, he had some issues with the band and those sorts of things, and you know, there was a breakup there, and two sides to the story and everything. And I like Aaron; he's a good guy. But he took exception to some things that I wrote, and I honestly can't remember what they are now, but I heard him calling me out in the media at one point, or the radio show he was on where he was saying this Jeff Burlingame guy is an asshole or something. I don't remember. I know, however, looking back, that I was fair with the subject matter, so whatever it was he had an issue with, I know that I reported it fairly, and I would stand by whatever it was I said.
That's about all you can do. I firmly believe you can't say or do anything without pissing somebody off somewhere, and some people are just looking for it, and you know, and it's not your intention. I know you well enough to know that you're writing the truth. And let's go back to the couch. How was it Kurt was sleeping on somebody's couch?
Yeah, well, he just had some, I mean, his parents had gone through a divorce when he was young, which sort of, as legend goes, had sort of sent him into a tailspin, a spiral, where he was this perfect kid prior. And then after that, he was in trouble and all those sorts of things. So he had issues at home. Eric Schillinger's dad and mom just sort of said, Kurt was really good friends with Eric's older brother, Steve. And so he said, can Kurt come and stay at our house? And the parents said, sure, you know. And that's just how it happened. He just lived on their couch.
Were you surprised that the record did that well? I mean, it was like quadruple platinum in no time.
Never mind, for sure, yeah. I mean, knowing the backstory there, it was even more surprising to me than anything. But, you know, I think the music world was ready for a change at that point. And Nirvana, you know, good band, great band, but just in a way, right place at the right time as well.
They credit MTV quite a bit, the Smells Like Teen Spirit video, for that reason, what you're just saying. And when I look back on it, and I look back at what was going on in the 80s and going into the 90s and whatnot, that was some pretty lame stuff coming out. And the videos looked like somebody made it with a Tinker Toy or something. I don't know. The Smells Like Teen Spirit really kicked butt, I thought.
Oh, it absolutely did, yeah. I think that, like I said, everything was just ripe for a change, and then this came along and ushered in this new grunge music, and it sort of took over the airwaves for 4 or 5 years. Kurt's death kind of sent it, ironically and coincidentally, sent it back down to the grave, so to speak.
He was talking on an interview that I saw about grunge music and where did that come from, and he had no idea. You know, I don't think anybody knows what, when they get pigeonholed into a genre, especially when they make up a new name for one, but I found it entertaining anyway.
Yeah, I didn't ever see them as a grunge band. Well, I mean, I do now because they were one of the reasons that that term was invented, but I just saw them as a kind of a hard rock punk band, sort of, you know, punk rock and roll kind of thing.
Yeah, he almost started a fashion statement, and I looked at it going, that's what we all wore in Aberdeen, you know? there never really was any GQ look there.
That was one of the things that I really, you know, I of course followed this subject matter like crazy over the years, and, you know, the fashion aspect of it is one of the things that was a little bit funny to watch for me, too, you know, to see designer New York City fashionista is just kind of developing this grunge look, and it was, like you said, Bruce, it was what we wore when we were growing up in Aberdeen. My dad was a logger. We wore flannel all the time. Our jeans were ripped because we had no money. It was the same thing with Kurt, but then when you see these people price tagging $100 flannel shirts and $200 ripped jeans, you can't help but laugh at it.
Yeah, and we wear the same one day after day, too, a lot of times. You'd wash it now and then, of course, but yeah, that struck me funny. And Chris Novoselic, do you know much more about, you know, I tried to get in touch with him. I'm sure he's busy, but he's ran for political office, I understand.
He was going to run for lieutenant governor of the state of Washington at one point, but he decided not to do it. I think he became friends with the person who was running, or the current lieutenant governor, and just decided not to do that. But he's active politically for sure. He's the national chairman of this organization called Fair Vote, which is basically just an organization trying to get, you know, fair voting, I guess, across the country. which has made some headway. And he's living in Southwest Washington now, and he's definitely busy.
Yeah, I need to mention to the listeners, I'm from Aberdeen myself. I was actually born in Seattle, and we lived in Bellevue until I was two. I was born in Seattle because there wasn't a hospital in Bellevue back then. I think Lincoln was in office during that period. And my father, who was from Aberdeen, insisted on we started his veterinary practice there in Aberdeen. And that's why I went all through Aberdeen High School and everything. And yeah, I was touched by the story as well. What's the future for you? It looks like you've written, over 30 books, I believe.
Yeah, the Cobain book was interesting in that, just to give you a little background on myself, I grew up extremely poor in a South Aberdeen trailer park. Reading and music were pretty much my only two escapes at some point. And so I always wanted to be an author. I kind of got into it in a roundabout way. I saw a door opening up with this Cobain book. A publisher just asked my friend saw a call from a publisher that said, we need someone to write a book on Kurt Cobain. We're looking for someone. And I called this publisher up and I said, this is going to sound a little bit egotistical here, but I'm going to be the best person to write that book for you. And here's why. And I sold myself to them. And I got the job, and the book did well, and it just sort of catapulted me into a career of an author. And then I've since did what publishers wanted me to do for a period of time, and now I kind of do what I want to do in terms of the types of books that I write. And it's been great. It has been kind of a dream. It's not easy. A lot of long hours. 30 books in 10 years is not an easy thing to achieve, but I needed to put food on the table, and so that's what I had to do it. And now I'm kind of slowing down a little bit and taking things at my own pace and writing about subjects that I choose and that I want to write about.
You're writing a novel, aren't you?
I am, yeah. That's something I've been working on, picking away at.
That's a first for you, though. Like you've been nonfiction all this time.
Yeah, everything else is nonfiction. The novel thing, it's interesting how the field works. The nonfiction stuff pays the bills. And the fiction stuff is kind of a hobby unless you can get, signed or whatever. But getting that first fiction book out there is kind of difficult sometimes. And there's no money, there's no advances, there's no royalties, there's nothing until someone buys it. And so I've been doing the nonfiction to kind of sustain myself while I pecked away at this other thing. But nonfiction isn't a secondary love. It's right up there with fiction. Telling stories is fun.
Isn't the largest market for books romance novels?
I don't know if romance novels. I know that that was big at one point. The YA genre, the young adult genre, the teen fiction novels, the Harry Potters and the vampire stories and all those sorts of things, the Twilights. Those are pretty much top of the charts nowadays.
Well, speaking of being germane to the area you live in, why aren't you writing about vampires? You're close to Forks. That's just up north a ways, huh?
I know. One of those books I wrote, in fact, I'm working on the third edition of it now, was a kind of a travel handbook thing on the Olympic Peninsula Moon Publishing Company out of California. And it did really well internationally. I mean, they've got a good distribution network. And so we're working on the third edition of that now. And Forks is one of the cities that was included in that, so we talk about Twilight in the book. It's kind of died down a bit now. 6-7 years ago it was at its peak, and you went through Forks and you couldn't throw a stone without hitting something Twilight related. But now it's kind of died down. When I made my last pass through last year, there wasn't as much stuff. There was a fire that consumed one of the Forks buildings, and they didn't rebuild. One of the Twilight related buildings, they didn't rebuild. And it's there's still some things, but not as much.
Yeah, they pretty much sucked the blood out of that one. Aberdeen gets like almost 85 inches of rain per year. Forks gets even more, don't they? Is that why they're growing vampires up there? I don't know. I don't know a lot about vampires. Yeah, well, you know what? I am glad to have talked to you, and maybe we could do something in the future. But for now, I just want to say thank you so much and make it better each day, Jeff Burlingame.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. can learn more about Jeff Burlingame and his books on the Better Each Day website show notes. There was an outtake to this interview when I had a short conversation with Jeff regarding the Founders Day Parade in Aberdeen, where he was asked to be Grand Marshal. He was humbled and with some hesitation accepted, and this is what he had to say about his notoriety in small town America on a 4th of July week parade with his father at the wheel, his wife, and his proud son.
I see your picture and it looks pretty good, so.
Okay, we'll go with that. That was a good hair day that day.
It sounds like you had a big weekend.
Yeah, the Grand Marshal thing was kind of fun, you know? I got the call, I don't know, a month or two ago, and just asked if I would do it, and I said, you know, well, why me, first of all? And then they kind of explained that, you know, it's something that's deserving honor, and I thought about it. I talked about it with a couple of friends who said, you know, if you can just sort of, if there's one kid who is in a similar situation to you and you can kind of inspire them to become something because they saw you in a parade, you know, that'd be a good thing. So I gave in and did it, and it turned out really well. I was glad I did.
That's pretty cool. Not a lot of people could say that. One of my claims to fame is I had my picture taken with NFL Hall of Famer Rosie Greer, who was the guy that took the gun away from Sirhan Sirhan a little bit too late after he shot Bobby Kennedy, and I was wearing a Miss Piggy outfit.
Why were you wearing that?
I have a picture of it to prove it. It's a long story. I did singing telegrams when I was in college to help pay my way. Yeah, I did some really strange things in my life. That's another story. Let's talk about Jeff Burlingame, the author.
Support for Better Each Day comes from BruceHilliardHomes.com. For a better day in buying or selling a home, search BruceHilliardHomes.com or visit our website, Better Each Day, for more information. And while you're there, subscribe to the show. It's free. That's BruceHilliardHomes.com, Windermere Real Estate. And make it better each day.
Radio show with Bruce Hilliard. We'll be back with a new horizon, but until then, honor the future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
We're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.